It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah! All right, here we go. Friday. Fun. Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Big show on the way. We're going to talk some boxing in less than 25 minutes with a legendary promoter, Bob Arum. I've had Bob on a bunch of times. Looking forward to speaking to Bob, who's still sturdy and strong and promoting and has a big card coming up. Willie Ramirez is back at the Finley Toyota Studios. Jake is helping us out down here. Griffin steering the entire ship. It's a lot of responsibility, Griffin. A lot of responsibility. William, what's going on, buddy?
I am 100% elated, excited. This is a big day. Big day, May 2nd, 2025. Do you know why?
Why?
Call yourself a sports talk show host. Preseason WNBA, baby.
Yes, we're going to get to...
It is underway.
Caitlin Clark in multiple parts of the show. We don't talk WNBA and the show without at least some note on Caitlin Clark. That is the rule.
We'll talk about her injury and how she'll probably won't play tomorrow.
Even with... not defending champion, but multiple-time champion, the Aces in town. So we'll get to Caitlin and the Aces in less than 35 minutes or so. Knights got the job done last night. That was nerve-wracking. So was the game before that. But, you know, in the playoffs, we are freaking spoiled because generally they come through. They don't win the cup every year, but they come through. And last night, in a very tight game, 1-1 game, one of the best passes you're ever going to see from Mark Stone way back in the VGK zone in the anticipation to throw it ahead. The Wild looked helpless, and the puck was right on the freaking stick.
Never in doubt.
I was worried. I was watching. I was like, man, I really don't want to go to a Game 7 here. Let's get this over with.
I felt, they eventually pull it. I thought you were saying from early on in the series they were down 2-1. I was never in doubt that they weren't moving on to the second round. Never. Not once. I was off by one game. I said they were going to win in five. They won in six. Once Jack Eichel and Mark Stone got going, it was a done deal because I said it before the series and throughout the series. Yes, I mean, at one point, there were 12 goals, and 8 of them were scored by one line. And I'm talking about Minnesota.
Right.
So, yeah, they had their line step up at times and pop a goal in. But in reality, their top line is what drove them. We kept saying Vegas is still in it. They're, it's not like Minnesota's running away with it. It was 2-1, then 2-2, then 3-2, and then they clinch it. But their top line didn't get going until the last couple of games. So that means that Vegas was in it because of their goaltender and their bottom, six or their second, third, and fourth line. The depth was going to carry it. And once Jack Eichel and Mark Stone got going, it was a done deal. The depth was there. It was never in doubt. Never.
Well, to your point, Jack Eichel didn't score until he scored last night. So six That's games, right. Eichel didn't score. Not that he's like a prolific goal scorer, but the effectiveness of that line hadn't been tremendous on the stat sheet. But good win. And you know what? To put it in perspective, I said we're spoiled here in Las Vegas as media following the Knights, and you fans are definitely spoiled. You know, I was looking back, and I'm like, I feel like the Wild are in the playoffs almost every year. Like, they're a good organization, and I think it's like 7 of the last 9 they've been in the playoffs. They've only made it out of the first round 4 times. They've been around since 2000, 2001. 4 times in 20 years, the Knights have now won. That means playoff series won. It's 4 times in 20 seasons. Right. The Knights have now won 12 playoff series. They started in 2017.
Right.
12! Right. The Wild are good. It's a solid organization. 4 in 20 years?
They've lost 8 straight opening round series. You're right. I want to correct you just on one thing, just to point something out. Yes, we're waiting for Eichel to score that one goal to try to trigger him and get him going. But I want to correct you that it's not a prolific goal scorer that he is. He's a prolific point gatherer because he had 94 points in the regular season. 66 were assists, only 28 goals. He really didn't rank among the leaders in goals. He ranked among the leaders in points. So it was a matter of getting his offensive game. He's a center, so it's a matter of his ice presence and seeing things. So I just want to point that out. It's not necessarily that he's a prolific goal scorer. It's what he brings in and creates on offense with his assists. But, yeah, Minnesota, and that's why we've seen their coaches drop off is because they get in and then they get out. And it's a matter, and you know, when you got a guy like Kirill Kaprizov, and Matt Boldy really stepped up in this series, but you have to have depth. I mean, Ryan Hartman came on strong in the last couple of games, but there's got to be more to it. I thought realistically their MVP of this series was Philippe Gustafsson. Their goaltender was phenomenal in keeping Vegas at bay through those first four games, and then, you know, boom, Vegas just took over in games 5 and 6. And hey, they were right there, two overtime games. You could say it could have went the other way, but Vegas stepped up when it was time to, and now they move on, and I feel as if they are up again. I think that they're in another mismatch against the Edmonton Oilers.
Big story across the sports world, but it's even bigger now because the news side has taken hold of it. Internationally, they've grabbed this one. It's a WAG story, so you know in Great Britain, they're going to be all over that. Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson were at the end of the week. We'll see if anything else weird comes out about the way Jordan Hudson is operating around Bill Belichick. Here's Howard Stern, this is the Stern Show. He and Robin even took notice of Belichick and the and that weird CBS Sunday morning interview.
He was interviewed by CBS Sunday morning, but
yeah.
He asked Bill about his girlfriend, 24-year-old Jordan Hudson. Jordan was in the room. She jumped right in.
Not talking about this.
End of statement. Can we just sit here silently and you guys promote my book? So the interviewer took a different approach. He asked about the couple's Instagram photo shoots.
I'm on some of those social media platforms. But I honestly don't follow him.
I let her take all the stupid pictures she wants.
That's right. What she wants me to get a fishing pole and pose, whatever.
Who cares? Who cares?
He's looking at that reporter and saying, "You do it too."
And that's been the logic from a lot of people. But then there's the story that came out, Willie, about the real estate empire, which has changed some people's minds who were on the side of Jordan Hudson. And I got to tell you, Cofield, Willie, you can see me doing it. Ready? Barry Horowitz, pat on the back. I'm going to do it for myself. Because going back to Tuesday, people were trying to step up for Jordan Hudson without knowing the entire story. And Cowherd did that early in the week. This was Cowherd today, now that he's seen the real estate empire of over $8 million that Jordan Hudson has amassed, collected, since being with Belichick. Fire it.
My first opinion was, bit cringy. He's 70-plus, she's 24. Then I watched the CBS interview, which she stepped in front of, and like a professional said, "You're not talking about our private relationship." My second opinion was, it's still age-wise a little creepy, but in college football, old Bill needs this. He just happens to be dating it too, but he needs this.
He doesn't. Colin's still wrong. He also didn't say everything he said earlier in the week, which he called her a professional, said lots of people have PR people like this, Willie. No, lots of people don't have PR people like this. They're called a girlfriend. And whether she is duping Belichick into the real estate fortune or she asked him and she's an investor, she's really not a PR person. In fact, would say she stormed out of that CBS Sunday morning interview multiple times. That's not a PR person. You ever see a PR person storm out of a press conference or a press meetup and leave their employer to sit there? That's not a PR professional. That's ridiculous.
Well, the PR person is who you count on to be calm, cool, and collected.
Exactly. If Bill stormed out, then the PR person is like, "Okay, Bill." And then you go to the CBS morning crew. "Okay, it's going to be okay. We're going to bring him together. It's got to calm down a little bit." She's storming out. That's not a PR person. And fire the next one.
So she's out there as this PR and social influencer saying, Bill, that doesn't play. Don't talk about that. Do talk about this. Now, if she starts to break down offense on the whiteboard next week, I'll step in and change my opinion. But as I watched this interview, I thought, oh, I've watched interviews like this. CEOs have people like Jordan Hudson. She's taken the role seriously. I mean, again, I thought it was weird. I didn't know what to make of it. But when I watched that interview, I'm like, oh, I've seen that before.
That was back on Tuesday, and I went on the air, and I'm like, you have not seen this before. Wait until the rest of the stories come out. Wait for some clarity. Don't go contrarian and back someone up when you don't know the entire story.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Because I don't think that when I was on, we talked about this, about Belichick, that this interview and Jordan's reaction and when she said. Let me just ask you a question in general, though.
Yeah.
Who cares?
The entire world. I knew you would say this. It is a massive story because what it looks like, Willie, is your classic relationship where a guy or woman has dated into fortune, and it's so out of character for Belichick to look like he's now being led by someone else. He made a career speaking for himself. He made a career of not doing interviews like this. He made a career of never punching down. Releasing a statement after a bad interview, Belichick in the past was like, who cares? It's time for football. Let's move on. So I'm guessing after the embarrassment and the criticism that Jordan then stepped up again and said, hey, you need to release a statement, which really meant, hey, I need to release a statement because I'm getting beat up on the internet. He doesn't care. So what has changed about Bill Belichick's existence where he's allowing this to happen? Can I give you the last... heard here, because then again today heard got into it, and it's like, okay, now it's time to change your mind a little bit because something weird maybe is happening.
There was a story in the New York Post yesterday that Jordan Hudson has amassed $8 million in real estate, multiple homes, starting at the time she started dating Bill. Who am I to pry? Another part of this story is looking back at her family who had a fishing business that went bankrupt. Her mother moved to Cape Cod, and now, I'll only say this once, manages a sex toy shop and museum. Didn't know they existed. The museum part doesn't sound like the Smithsonian, but who am I to be snarky? The family's a little different. It does appear now I'll have a third opinion, which is they are both benefiting in multiple ways from each other.
Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Las Vegas. I believe of all the hosts that we have, local and national, the best host that we have. But again, as I said on Tuesday, he's wrong. Because when I read this real estate story, Willie, I thought, well, clearly they have an arrangement until something comes out to say that, hey, Belichick is now filing a complaint that he's been ripped off. I think they have an arrangement. She clearly wants him to make money and she wants to make some of it with him. Like, she's got the chops. When I read the real estate story, I was like, these kind of look like good investments. High-end rental properties. She sounds pretty smart. Not a PR person, but a real estate investor. And honestly, your question earlier about who cares, this end of it, unless something comes out that's nefarious, I really don't care what Jordan Hudson does with Belichick's money. If Belichick is like, hey, here's some money, go invest it for me, then that's between them and their relationship.
Well, nefarious. Well, first of all, my who cares was her interjection in saying we're not talking. First of all, when the host asked Bill Belichick about how they're talking about her as well. So Bill Belichick was a subject, but the fact is they brought her into the interview. It's her business. So if she's saying we're not talking about it, then she has every right to. Number one. Number two, if it turns out to be nefarious, you know what? To be honest with you, I know a couple of dancers in town that are dating a couple of very well-to-do married men.
Mm-hmm.
If they take them for their money, then that's on them. That's on them. You got involved.
So is it okay to care about Bill Belichick in this case, or is this our pound of flesh? Like,
all of a sudden you care about Bill Belichick?
I can all of a sudden care about a lot of people.
Okay.
Because it just seems so out of nature for Belichick. Willie, if you started dating someone and your nature changed a lot, right? And then all of a sudden, you're available for Cofield and Company twice a month. The two times you are available, you show up late, you don't send a prep list. Like, yeah, I would I'd probably think to myself, hey, something's happening with his work performance. Now, we don't know that yet. Belichick may go out and have a 10-2 season. North Carolina could be revitalized, but if it is a disaster, this could be one of the things I point to. Like, Bill, you don't have your ducks in a row. You're not operating like you did for years, right? Blinders. Football, 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 football. On the way, we talk some boxing. Bob Arum.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
All right, rolling on, T.I. on the strip on this Friday. Steve Cofield, Willie Ramirez. Willie, massive boxing weekend, some creative location work in Times Square, but we've got a big-timer here in Vegas. Well, Bob Arum is a big-timer, but I think he's got one of the future stars, current stars, certainly in Japan, of boxing. The Monster is in the U.S. Bob Arum is with us here on Cofield & Company here on this Friday. Bob, how are you?
Really good, really good. We just had the press conference, and the Monster is fit and ready, and he's up against a really tough Mexican-American kid. Castellada for, you know, Cinco de Mayo weekend. Should be a great, great fight.
So, Bob, for people who don't follow boxing real closely but are sports fans, Inoue kind of has everything you need. But tell the audience about Inoue, what he's done to this point, and why you were so fired up to promote him.
Well, I've been promoting Inoue, co-promoting him, mostly in Japan, for a number of years. And not only is he a great boxer, but he doesn't win fights by decisions. He wins fights by annihilating and knocking out his opponents. I mean, you look at him, he's 122 pounds, and he hits like a heavyweight. I mean, it's the most amazing thing that I've seen, and it's a real treat to watch him. So the fans have a lot of interesting experiences watching Inoue. He's had a remarkable career, and it'll only continue to get better.
Bob, I was I have to think that my phone was listening to me, the algorithm or something, because in telling a few people that you were going to be on today, because out of nowhere, on a couple of my feeds, on my internet feeds, I was getting different stories, historic stories, and one of them was that Sugar Ray Leonard recently revealed the hardest person that ever hit him was Roberto Duran, and of course you know them both well and promote a lot of fights. Where does Inoue fit in terms of hardest hitting boxers at that weight class or in those that lower class of weight?
Well, when Leonard and Duran fought each other, they were both at 147-pound welterweights. So they were much bigger guys than Inoue is at 122. Duran was relentless and was able to knock out his opponents by swarming them and throwing dozens and dozens of punches until the opponent quit from exhaustion. Now, Inoue is different. Inoue looks like he's boxing the guy, and he does for a couple of rounds, and then he has scouted out openings, and he's able to exploit those openings to take out his opponent with one or two punches. So it's not like Duran. I mean, obviously Duran was a great knockout guy and a great fighter, and I love Roberto. But his skill set was a lot different from Inoue.
Bob, we're speaking with Bob Arum, CEO, Top Rank Boxing. Bob, when you talk about promoting in Vegas, you said you just got done with the press conference. I don't even think that you could put a number on how many press conferences you've done in this city. The excitement around Las Vegas for the past 8 years or so with the Golden Knights, the Raiders, the Aces, and so many other things coming to Vegas and being here. But you've been promoting professional boxing in Las Vegas for decades. This has been a professional sports town when it comes to prize fighting. Can you just talk about the rich history for those listening? And just, you know, I mean, you've done it so many times, but please tell our listeners.
Well, you know, boxing was synonymous at one particular time with the great outdoor events that were held at Caesar's Palace. And in throughout the 80s and into the 90s, almost all the major boxing events around the world took place in Las Vegas at that outdoor arena in Caesar's Palace. And that was the high water mark for boxing in Las Vegas. And as you said, in that era, we had no professional teams in Las Vegas. The most professional team was the UNLV Running Rebel basketball team, huh? Right? But now we're blessed with a professional hockey team of the highest level. The Raiders are here now. The Athletics will be playing Major League Baseball here before we know it. And there'll be a big, I'm sure, a professional basketball team. We have, with women's sports, the Aces. So we're becoming like the big city that we are with all the great, great attractions coming to Las Vegas. So boxing will always be there, but now it has to share the audience with a lot of other sports.
Bob Arum is with us on Cofield and Company. The Monster, Inoue, is here in the States. Fights at 122. Unbelievable knockout power. Goes for knockouts. There's no dancing. There's no playing around. He wants to finish his opponent. It's a Sunday card right here in Vegas. AXS.com. AXS.com is where you get your tickets. I want to go back to the interest in a way, because to put it in perspective, I think you need to talk about what you've seen in Japan. On the ground in Japan, we know the baseball players are mega stars there, like Shohei. What is it like for Inoue and his fights?
Well, for example, when we booked Inoue to fight this Mexican fighter, Neri, we were able to get the Tokyo Dome, where the Tokyo Giants play baseball. Big, big indoor arena. And there hadn't been a fight in the Tokyo Dome since Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson.
Wow.
And so 30 or so years later, we were able to get the Tokyo Dome for a boxing match, and tickets went on sale, 55,000 seats, and were sold out before the end of the day. It was something absolutely special. Inoue is a huge, huge attraction in Japan. I mean, he is beloved. Next to Otani, I would say, he is the leading athlete in Japan.
Wow.
And has the biggest, biggest following. And that means big endorsements, big everything. So you mentioned to a Japanese sports fan, Inoue, they know immediately who you're talking about.
Bob, we always like to lean on you, Bob Arum's with us, on your opinion of promotions and where events are held. I think this Times Square deal seemed like a good idea. What do you hear about it? And maybe it's not going to work?
Well, you know, it remains to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a lot of money to do a fight where you don't charge admission. So I guess the Saudis can come up with the money. and can absorb that. And so they put this event in Times Square. Now, if I was doing it, I would have made a deal with Madison Square Garden and put the event in the garden, in the theater at Madison Square Garden, or maybe even at Radio City Music Hall. But, you know, to put the event in Times Square, where you don't sell tickets and you get fans that are hardly interested, I mean, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But again, they're the ones who have the money, and I'm not going to tell anybody how they should spend their money.
Right, right. Maybe a loss leader for the future. We got to close on this with Inoue. So he's got a tough fight against Cardenas. If he gets by this, the dream fight is Nakatani. Where we are the roadblocks to that? When could we see that fight if Inoue gets the job done here?
Well, there's not going to be a roadblock. I mean, I would think that that fight will be held sometime early next year. Inoue has another fight on his card in September, and then has promised the Saudis a fight in Riyadh in December, and I think the Nakatani fight would take place probably in February or March.
Bob, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and thanks for having a big-time fight here with a superstar, an international star in Vegas. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There he is. Bob Arum.
The legend.
Yeah, Inoue is he's on the precipice here if they can make it work of being a megastar. Now, is that going to work in the U.S. with a 122-pounder, a super bantamweight? Yeah, it can, if he's a knockout fighter. I think most people, when they tune in, I mean, they see a smaller guy. I don't know if they really know the difference between a 122-er and 147. If he goes in and he delivers, I can tell you what's not going to deliver is, say, you know, at in the case of Shakur Stevenson, dancing and dipping. And, hey, Turki Alsheikh's gotten into business with him. I hope it pays off for him, because that's one of the issues with boxing is, hey, there's good money for the fighters. I totally understand. You can be a defensive fighter. You can not go for the kill, but you're in competition now in 2025 as you've never been before for the eyes of the audience. You got to go out and finish fights. You got to go out and end these things. On the way back, WNBA underway, preseason slate, Aces on the road.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Practice started at the beginning of the week around the WNBA, and now officially back on the hardwood. The league is, Willie, as we got some games this weekend. Aces in their Notre Dame homecoming reunion. I guess it would be a reunion going against the Dallas Wings. Set this one up for us.
Yeah, big Notre Dame reunion. This seems to be a popular thing that they're doing with the WNBA, which is kind of cool, is returning to the home arenas of some college stars now in the WNBA. So they're going to Notre Dame. Jackie Young and Arike Ogunbowale won a title in Notre Dame. Arike, of course, is, I think, personally, when she gets hot, gets going, she's one of the most lethal, if not the best scorer, pure scorer in the WNBA. She gets on fire, and it's lights out. She and Jackie are Notre Dame alum, Arike in Dallas. And then Jewel Lloyd, the recent pickup from the Seattle Storm to the Aces in that three-way trade that sent Plum to LA. She also went to Notre Dame. So, and it, what the cool thing is I did a big piece on Jewel Lloyd, came out today on my website, wgramirez.com, is Jackie and Arike, they sort of looked up to her, right? They went to Notre Dame. Arike was already a pro, and Arike and Jackie looked up to Jewel. They were there and were kind of looked up to Jewel. It was she didn't mentor them, but that's someone, you go to that college, the history of Notre Dame's program, and now Jewel and Jackie are teammates. That starts tonight. They're playing the Dallas Wings, and of course Paige Becker's the number one overall pick. Both Paige and obviously Arike in the starting lineup. They just released, Dallas just tweeted out their starting lineup. I believe Vegas is going with Asia, Chelsea, Jackie, Jewel, and Kia Stokes. for their starting five.
Demand for this ticket, as compared to the Fever against Brazil on Sunday, if you don't know, Caitlin Clark is bringing the Fever back home to Iowa, Iowa City, Carver Hawkeye Arena. The Aces Wings game tonight, get-in price on the secondary market is $13. The Sunday game with the Fever and Caitlin Clark, the get-in price is $163 just to get into the arena. The average ticket resale price right now is $440.
Unfortunately, right now, Caitlin Clark is questionable for tomorrow's preseason game against the Washington Mystics with a lower leg injury. So they play tomorrow and Sunday. I would think she may sit out tomorrow so
right.
she can make sure that she is playing, obviously, at Carver on Sunday. I can't see her missing that. So, yeah, it's off and running. The hype train is there. Caitlin Clark leading the hype train for the WNBA into the season and a lot of other storylines as well. So, and it's great. It's awesome. I was in Dallas Wings pregame Zoom. I was in the pregame Zoom with Becky, pregame Zoom with the Dallas Wings. And a lot of excitement around the league, which is great. That's what they want. That's what they need. And we know what took place last year as far as the eyeballs and what brought them there. And, you know, joining millions that were already watching, but now in droves, the Caitlin Clark freight train that arrived. And now this year, Paige Beckers is going to do the same. And it's fantastic. So, yeah, there you go.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
We're hanging out at TI. Remember, Gilly's Barbecue Restaurant, open for dinner and features a show kitchen, views of the strip as well. Parking is free here at Treasure Island. At Gilly's, they got the custom saddle seats at the bar, live entertainment, line dancing, mechanical bull riding, and of course, the world famous Gilly's Girls. It's a reincarnation and modern evolution of the famed honky-tonk cowboy saloons and dance halls in Texas, and only Treasure Island has it. Gilly's Barbecue Restaurant. Come on down and check it out. Let's bring in our SoCal NBA expert, Grant Mona. Sporting Tribune is on with Cofield and Company with Steve and Willie. Grant, what's up, buddy?
Good to hear from you guys. We only have one Los Angeles team left in the playoffs so far.
I know.
The last time I talked to you guys, we had a few, but Clippers are the last one standing for now. So good to hear from you guys.
We got a lot to get into with the Lakers, but we'll hold off on that for a couple of minutes. First of all, last night's game, again, the atmosphere was insane. And I got to say, the fourth quarter was great. The second quarter before halftime, I mean, talk about superstars responding. Both James Harden and especially big fella Jokic, like, took it upon themselves. They were not going to let their team lose. I thought the defensive matchups and how teams attacked in the game were fascinating.
Yeah, guys, I mean, especially Zubats on Jokic. I mean, he's, like I said before last week, like, he's taking him one-on-one and doing a fantastic job. I mean, he had two blocks late. But that second quarter, you're right. Like, James Harden needed a game like this. There are so many people talking about his lackluster performances in the playoffs, what he doesn't do in the playoffs. And he responded with a 28-point game and an awesome second quarter. In the second half, it obviously tailed off a little bit, but he had a 21-point first half. And that's exactly what the Clippers needed. Not just that, guys, but Nikola Jokic. I mean, he himself, by himself, can instill fear into any NBA team. I don't care who it is. I don't care how good your defense is. So we're headed for a collision course here in Game 7, but the Clippers got their guys to step up, and that's something that they didn't do, guys, in Game 4 and 5.
Do you worry about James Harden from a stamina standpoint?
I do, because you know what? We've seen it in years past where, you know, as the series goes on, when he was in Philly, even when he was in Houston in his younger days, in Brooklyn we saw it, where as the series progresses, I don't care if it's the first round or the second round or whatever it is, the conference finals, he gets more tired as series go on. And guys, he played 46, 47 minutes somewhere around there in Game 6. Obviously, they needed him to do that, and we asked him after the game, like, is that sustainable? And he said, we have to. You know, I have to do this because this is what the scenario entails. They're in an elimination scenario, so he understands that. But again, that's one of my concerns heading into this Game 7 is, can James Harden replicate what he did in Game 6 for the entirety of the game? Not just, you know, in the first half or in the second half. He's got to do it for the entirety of the game to keep up with what Denver has on their offensive end, because it looks like Jamal Murray's healthy again, too.
Speaking with Grant Mona, NBA insider of the Sporting Tribune, do the Clippers have the Nuggets right where they want them, though?
That's a good question. And, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people around the league. You know, I talk to a lot of people at these games, and a lot of them seem to think it leans Denver. But, guys, we got to remember, like, the Clippers have already won in Denver in this series. They won in Game 2, so we know that they can play well there at their peak, right? And also, last year, Game 7, Denver against Minnesota, they lost a 20-point lead in the second half, and they blew that Game 7 against Minnesota to advance to the conference finals. So, you know, I think that sometimes we can look at it where that may help them, to where they have that still in the back of their minds, and they say, hey, we're not going to let that happen again on our home floor. Because you got to think, if they do that 2 years in a row on their home floor in a Game 7, like, what does that say about Jokic? What does that say about that Nuggets team? They may have to make a major move. But with the Clippers playing the way they did in Game 6, with the way they played in Game 3 and Game 2, they can beat not just Denver, but literally anybody. I think even OKC. But, you know, it just comes down to who's going to want it more. All the schemes, all the game plans, throw it out. Like, who is going to play the best on which team?
I have to wonder, Grant, is since Adelman took over, right, I tend to watch the box scores. Has he shortened his rotation, and do the Clippers have the advantage with depth?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because a lot of the talk this week was about J.J. Redick and what he did with his second half, and I believe it was Game 4, and how he played everyone 24 straight minutes. And, you know, he got a lot of criticism for that. Coach Adelman, it's not for a lack of trying. Like, he's tried other options. He's trying Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook has actually had a pretty good series, but they tried Jalen Pickett, and they tried other guys, and it just didn't work. Like, Julian Strother got minutes. So I don't think it's the fact that he doesn't have the assets to do so. It's the fact that he kind of has to. So all these guys, like, they're shortening the rotation, not even to 7. I think it's, like, 6. It's essentially just Russell Westbrook off the bench and maybe DeAndre Jordan. But other than that, it's literally their core five, their starting five, and they're saying, this is our best chance to win because we don't have the depth, and they're rolling with it. And again, that's why it's so surprising that Denver won Game 4. They won Game 5 in the fashion that they did, because you would think that these guys would be absolutely exhausted, but it seems like they've gotten better as the series has gone on, and the Clippers kind of reversed that until Game 6. So again, it's a war of attrition, but in Denver, high altitude, I mean, you can kind of take what you want from that.
Grant Mona on Cofield & Company covers the SoCal NBA scene for the Sporting Tribune. I'm not going to question anyone's injury status, and I'm a lover of LeBron. I will say that the news coming out that he hurt his MCL, the recovery time is 3 to 5 weeks. I do understand on the internet why people are going to be like, oh, okay, he was injured. What's your reaction to it coming out that he got hurt?
He banged his knee, and yes, it was, like, you know, it did invert his knee a little bit, and something that you would see from an MCL sprain, but it wasn't like he couldn't play after that. He came back into the game and looked, like, kind of fine. So, you know, I was telling a lot of people, we have our group chats over here in LA, and I was telling people, like, you know, Luka is an actor. These guys are built for Hollywood already. LeBron, we all know, like, he did that little peek under his hand that went viral on social media about him selling a foul. So I'm not going to say that he sold it completely, but I will say this, guys. This is not the first time that we've seen LeBron act like he just got pushed over by a tank after he ran into someone. So, again, this is something that happens towards the end of the season. Like, we saw this happen against Denver, where it kind of looked like he was making up excuses. We saw it in years past in the playoffs with him making excuses. Again, LeBron was not the issue in this series. I think he played a really good series. But again, like, some of these things that come out after the fact, like after these teams lose, and I look at it with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Well, I do think it was an issue last night at times. His ability or inability to make shots in the fourth quarter was a big deal. And sure, let's just talk brass tacks, because this is where this is going. Do the Lakers want LeBron around? Do they want to build a team around him and Luka, especially if it keeps them from making a run at
Giannis, I think they have some hard decisions to make here, and I'm not saying, hey, LeBron, get the hell out of here, but maybe there's some money decisions on the LeBron end that need to be made because, I mean, they've had playoff success, but not really recently, and he's 2-12 in his last 14 playoff games.
And, guys, here's the thing. Like, if they didn't acquire a 25-year-old generational superstar at the trade deadline, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I understand you building around LeBron still because he's still that good. Like, he puts up awesome stats in the regular season. But now that you have Luka Doncic, like, some of the things that Rob Pelinka said in his postseason press conference with J.J. Redick was like, LeBron has high expectations for this roster, and we want to meet them for him. It's like, why are you caring a lot about what LeBron wants at this point in his career, and why aren't you catering the team around Luka Doncic and what suits him the best? Now, listen, do you still have to build a great team? And I still understand what he's saying, is that LeBron has a lot of expectations for being competitive still at this point in his career, and I think they still want to put a competitive team around the two. But just the framing of the comments were like, hey, we're going to listen to him and frame it around him, and the expectations are going to be around him, to where I'm sitting here and I'm like, that era is essentially over. You have this new guy, hey, Luka Doncic, this new player that you just acquired, who is obviously one of the top five players in the league. Build around him. Like, make sure your team caters to him now. This is a new era. Don't worry about what LeBron wants. Go all in on Luka and what his play style kind of suits.
And last one, Grant. Grant Mona, Sporting Tribune, SoCal NBA expert. I think LeBron has got to be more affordable for them because they've got to not only make a run at Giannis, and then you have two superstars, what, 32 or less, to build around. But the rest of the roster, the more you watch that series against the T-Wolves, you're like, the Wolves are just simply better. They have so many more weapons. They can match up in different ways. They're bigger. Like, this roster is very incomplete.
Right, and that's my biggest issue. Like, people are going at J.J. Redick, but it was literally the roster that they gave him. You're not going to put in Gabe Vincent or Jordan Goodwin to stop Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards. Like, they were just so undersized. They weren't physical enough. They didn't have the length. Like, yeah, DFS is good. Yeah, Jared Vanderbilt's good. But, yeah, Rui is a big player. But they didn't have that, like, physical young legs that Minnesota had. And if LeBron, guys, opts into his $54 million player option that he has, that handcuffs you for next year. And if they are really serious about competing for a championship next year, they got to really think about this roster. I don't know who will be traded. Maybe it is Rui. Maybe it is even Austin Reeves, as good as he was. But if LeBron opts into that $54 million option, that puts them in a bind to where now they can't get some of the assets that would better them in free agency. So they have a lot of decisions to make. They're not firing J.J. Redick. They have Luka. They have kind of a core, but now LeBron has to make that decision. Like, do you still want to win, or are you just going to get your money and try to go on from there?
Grant, you rule. Enjoy the end of the series coming up this weekend. Hopefully there's still life for L.A. moving forward. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys. See you next week.
Right, Grant Mona, Sporting Tribune, and we'll get to J.J. Redick. I thought his behavior was petulant before the game and after the game, and dare I say, another person in sports who's got to humble themselves?